Now, let's get back to the Boomer Planners. Here are Thomas Lee, Howard Hafetz, and David Abrams on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back. Once again, if you'd like to pose a question or have any information you'd like us to comment on, you can reach us at 888-463-6748, or you can email us at tlee@theboomerplanners.com. I wanted to discuss a little bit about an issue that really affects all of us boomers and our parents, and that is the rising healthcare costs in this country. I was reading an article in Kiplinger magazine, and they indicated that over the past 5 years, inflation for hospital care alone has jumped almost 39%. Dental care is up 27%. Prescription drugs are up 21%. I mean, the average five-year inflation rate for U.S. cities was about 23%. I mean, that's outrageous. David, how can we select a primary care physician, and how are we going to pay for him?
Well, thanks, Tom, for letting me to jump in on here. This is almost like a rant for me I have. It's just you use the expression from time to time, there's a train coming in, because what you just said is so very important, is that the rate of increasing costs for providing medical care is so far outstrips other rising costs that it's been estimated by various doomsayers that Medicare is going to run out of money at a certain point in time. Well, it's not going to run out of money, but what is clearly going to happen is that Medicare at some point in time, although not going to end, it's going to have to look different. I mean, with this economic crisis is a wake-up call for people with their mortgages, wake-up call for people with their 401ks, but it's going to happen that it will become a wake-up call that people have to be prepared for how they're going to get access to medical care in the future. One of the things that I've experienced over the past few years that I've been teaching medical students at USC, that it is frustrating for me as well as a little bit frightening at the same time, that these kids who are really bright and enthusiastic and they really are looking forward to becoming doctors, I'm now 0-for-12 in getting any of them to choose to go into internal medicine. And that, you know, there was an article in one of the medical journals, the Journal of the American Medical Association, in early June, which did a survey of about 1,200 medical students around the country and wanted to know, were they interested in going into internal medicine? Were they interested in going into primary care? And of all the medical students that they interviewed, those 1,200, only 23% of them thought that they would consider going internal medicine. But of that 23%, only 2% said that they would go into primary care. So that if you realize that there is this train coming down the tracks, that we are going to have, not only Medicare is going to change, the financing for Medicare is going to get increasingly difficult, and the people who provide the care for the Medicare beneficiaries is going to shrink in number, is going to become increasingly more difficult to find a primary care physician. There was an article in the New York Times. You know, I guess I really am worked up about this. But there was an article in the New York Times in last week, October 16th, about, you know, profiling a few different doctors who take care of geriatric patients and the fact that they're just not going to take any new patients who have Medicare. It's too time intensive. The reimbursements are 40% on the dollar, combined with being so time intensive, that it's just not worth it. You cannot devote your time and make so little return on your money. When you look at the causes of death of people who are over 65, we're talking about heart disease, cancer, stroke, respiratory disease, Alzheimer's disease. And then I talk to my medical students, say, these are really fascinating problems. Don't you want to spend day and night taking care of heart disease, cancer, stroke, and respiratory disease and get paid 40 cents on the dollar, and you have $250,000 in loans? Doesn't that all make sense to you, that you're going to devote your life and never get out of debt and never be able to buy a house? And it it's just not going to happen. There is a real problem here.
Well, I think so that you are absolutely correct. There is going to be a problem, but I have a more basic question. When you say primary care physician or internist, is that the same thing as a GP?
Well, I think you could say that a general practitioner or GP is someone who takes care. The terminology actually has changed. The term GP has now been replaced with family medicine specialist, because there almost no one will finish their medical school, take 1 year of what used to be called an internship, and then go into practice. That just really doesn't happen anymore. You're now going to take a family medicine residency, so that you still are a specialist. The term GP has been kind of phased out, but you can use that term as a general practitioner, someone who's going to take care of all age groups. It is really rare now for someone to take care of pediatric patients and geriatric patients in the same practice. But I think what you were referring to as a GP. So that right now it's so important for boomers to identify a doctor who will be their primary care physician in years to come. Because if you identify a primary care physician now who will take care of you now, they're not likely to dump you once you get on Medicare. But if you wait till you're on Medicare, and now I'm on Medicare. If you wait till you're on Medicare to find a doctor, you might not be able to choose as from the pool of doctors that you'd want to. So it's really important now, and this is after all of this ranting, the bottom line is boomers, get a doctor, become confident, and develop a trusting relationship with that primary care physician, because in the future there's going to be fewer of them. Their payment for the physicians is going down. The cost of getting that medical care is going to go up, but you got to have a doctor to take care of you. It's really, really important.
How do we, if I wanted to locate a doctor, David, a primary care, assuming I don't have one now, where would I go to find a guide?
Well, for me, over the 35 years I've been in practice, almost all of the patients that have been my patients have had an enduring relationship with those patients have all come from other patients of mine. So that the best source of information is someone who has an enduring, trusting relationship with their primary care physician, and they can make a recommendation. Now, sometimes no one really has that information for you. Your local hospital will have names of primary care physicians, but then what you're going to need to do is to get some kind of a double check on their credentials. Each of the state medical societies has their some kind of medical board of governance, which you can check on the internet to see what their training has been, whether or not they have a malpractice experience, whether or not what their specialties have been. These are some of the things that you have to check. But one of the things that I would also say is interview a couple doctors and see if you feel a chemistry, because over the years, the doctor-patient relationship is what is really going to go to keeping things going. And, you know, one of the other things that I was thinking about when you were talking about this, how things cost, is, you know, I'm talking about the doctor, and that's a problem, but with all the election issues about who's going to pay for medical care, one of the things which I was going to ask Tom to kind of help me out with is to describe what the boomers can do to help finance the purchase of their medical care, whether it be health savings account, flexible spending accounts. That really has been very helpful. Tom, what do you think?
I believe that it's important for people to be aware of at least a couple of these programs. You mentioned health savings accounts and flexible spending accounts. These programs have been around for a number of years. In essence, what they are designed to do is to assist you, the individual, in making arrangements for the payment of a variety of services and products and so forth in the healthcare arena. In my experience, flexible spending accounts generally are usually confined to the employer-employee relationship. So if you work for a large company, chances are pretty good they have a flexible spending account. Many people are self-employed, and you will see that those individuals, in most cases, are much better off if they have a health savings account. A health savings account, I read an article in a Money magazine recently, and I believe they called the health savings account program an example of the super deduction. The reason they say that is that folks can transfer, once you set up your health savings account, you can transfer literally thousands and thousands of dollars into one of these accounts, and the contributions to your HSA account can be deducted from your gross income. Now, that's a good thing, obviously, but it gets better. You can use the funds that are in the HSA account as long as you pay, use it to pay qualified medical expenses. And those items, there is a list of about 100 different categories of things, David, that can be paid through these HSA accounts, including everything from ambulances to optometrists. And you and I briefly spoke about long-term care insurance and health care insurance. And those types of payments can be made through the HSA accounts, David.
Well, I've experienced some of my patients in my preventive medicine practice who have taken a great advantage of that HSA because the additional fee that I charge to be involved with a preventive medicine practice that isn't reimbursed by insurance is covered most of the time by the expenses of the HSA, and that's been a real important help for patients who want to get involved with a physician in a preventive medicine practice or a concierge practice or a boutique practice that are getting increasingly more common, and they appear to be too expensive. But when you use these low premium, high deductible HSA accounts, but I was going to ask Tom, is that something that I just call up Anthem Blue Cross and say I want one of those, or
I think the easiest thing for folks to do is to talk to their healthcare provider, whoever that carrier is, and all the carriers now have programs where they have high deductible programs that are designed for HSA accounts. So I would start with your own carrier. If you cannot find it through that source, I would go on the internet, and if you Google health savings accounts, you'll get about 1 million pages of information. Howard, did you have a comment about these?
Absolutely. I want to make the point, ladies and gentlemen, that these accounts, obviously like any other financial instrument, have many attributes, but you have to be in the right financial position to be able to take advantage of them. Please sit down with a trusted advisor and ask the right questions of how you do it. How do I get those dollars into those accounts? You can't put money in these accounts that you don't have. And that happens a lot when I get questions about, well, I'd like to do this, Howard, I'd like to do that. Well, you have to have the financial wherewithal to be able to do that. So you have to sit down with a financial advisor that has the ability to help you make those good decisions.
I think that's a really important point, Howard. And, again, it's about seeking out qualified professional advisors. Although we talk about a variety of subjects on our show, please understand that all three of us, Howard, David, and Tom, all recommend that you speak to your particular advisor, whether it's in the healthcare, insurance, or legal arena. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back. If you'd like to call us, call 888-463-6748, and we'll be right back. We have some important information for you, so please stay tuned.